Second reading is Psalm 139, 1 through 18. The Inescapable God. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from far away. You search out my path and my lying down, and are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, O Lord, you know it completely. You hem me in, behind and before, and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is so high that I cannot attain it. Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and settle at the farthest limits of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light around me become night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is as bright as the day, for darkness is as light to you. For it was you who formed my inward parts. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works that I know very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes beheld my unformed substance. In your book were written all the days that were formed for me, when none of them as yet existed. How weighty to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. I try to count them. They are more than the sand. I come to the end. I am still with you.
How many of you are football fans? Raise your hand if you're a football fan. Okay. Raise your hand if you're a Tim Tebow fan. All right, we got a few who aren't football fans who are Tim Tebow fans. How about that? Okay. For those of you who don't know, Tim Tebow's this guy. This guy who has won the Heisman Trophy, the highest honor for an offensive player in college football. Won a national championship with his college team, which is the pinnacle of success for a college football team. He's a quarterback, and he is now the quarterback for the Denver Broncos. And he's a man of some controversy because, you know, after a touchdown is scored, all those ridiculous dances everybody does. I gotta practice. It is pretty much what they look like. They look ridiculous, and they do all of this, and some of them pull out a pen and sign something or pretend a sword. Our own Stevie Johnson of the Buffalo Bills pretends to shoot himself in the leg like the receiver of the other team, and gets a penalty and a fine. They all do these really funny things that just are. I think they're nasty and ridiculous. I remember one or two different college football coaches who told their players, when you get to the end zone, pretend you know what it feels like to be there. I like that idea. Like, it's not some great surprise, like you're there all the time. Like, you know, do you get up every morning and celebrate? Oh, it's January 15th. Yay! No. But what Tim Tebow does when he scores a touchdown is this. And he prays. He prays before the game. He prays during the game. And the first thing he'll say in his interviews afterwards is, first I want to thank my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ who has put so many wonderful things in my life. And then he goes on to talk about football. And this is called Tebowing now. Have you all heard of Tebowing? Yes, now you've all heard of Tebowing. And there are some people who really, really object to this. Some of them, very religious people. And the grounds that the Christian objectors hold up is Jesus' admonition not to make a public show of prayer. Jesus says, you know, those people who stand on the street corners and make a big deal about their praying, they've already gotten their reward. You, go to your room and pray in private to your Father. So they go from that to this idea that a show of public prayer is necessarily bad. well, not bad. That's not fair to them. It is over the top. Thank you, Doug. It's too much. It's over the top. It's too showy. I don't agree with that because of one distinction. Tim Tebow is not just some guy who's going out and make a big show of prayer so everyone will look at him. He's a guy who is on national TV doing something, and he's got the world's attention, and so he's deflecting that attention to his God. Very important difference. It's not so much like the man going to the street corner and praying just so everyone will give attention to him. It's more like Jesus on the cross praying while he's up there being looked at by everybody. It's closer to that. And it's a good thing, I think. I think it's a good thing for someone to do that. So, the sermon today, I'm very proud of the title. You have to say it in your best Shakespearean actor accent. Tebow or not Tebow? That is the question. Whether it is better to suffer the slings and arrows of outraged sports commentators. He puts himself out there in a faithful way. And you know, when you put yourself out there, two things happen. There's a group of people who are inspired to live a deeper, more faithful life. And there's a group of people out there who are inspired to find whatever dirt they can on you and try to tear you down. And so there are real slings and arrows. And his response to that is on a straight line. His response I read the other day was to say, my life is not the up and down roller coaster that other people feel when they look at my life. He's straight and narrow, even keel as much as he can. In fact, he invites other people. He invites people to his games, both home and away. He flies them in, puts them in a hotel at his expense, feeds them, then spends time with them right before kickoff of all things. And then as soon as his interviews are done after the game, which is part of his job, he goes and spends up to an hour with these people. At the Bills game, when he came to play Buffalo, when I was really rooting against him, he had this kid from Virginia who had lost, he was a football player, a high school football player, who had lost his leg above the knee and might not get to play football again. And they interviewed this kid and said, well, okay, after the Bills shellacked Tim Tebow 40-14 and intercepted him, what, four times? After that terrible game, what did Tim Tebow say to you when he came in the room? And the kid said, well, the first thing he said was, well, that didn't go according to plan. You gotta love that. Tebow or not Tebow? In microcosm, we each of us have that choice to make in our own lives. Do we let ourselves be right out there and identify ourselves with our faith so everyone can see and know? Or do we hold it back and hide it inside? Now, when I was first up here in seminary, I went to a guy who once gave me a job right out of college and asked him to give me a job again, and thank God Paul gave me a job again. as a copywriter at an ad agency for Xerox. And Paul knew that I was in seminary and I was studying for the ministry, but I don't think he told anyone that, and I didn't tell anyone that either. I didn't necessarily hide it. And most of you know that ad agencies are the most godly of places on the face of the earth, but I didn't just come forward and say what I did in my spare time. I did my job. I wrote copy for Xerox and a few other clients, and I worked with account executives and art directors and production managers, and I just was me doing my job. And slowly it began to leak out what I did when I wasn't at the office. And it came time, I was working part-time here at this church and living down in the parsonage. Don't stop me if you've heard this before. And I was working into
life as a servant of God full time. It's what I wanted to be. It's what I was studying to be. And the church was growing, this church, and we were getting really close to the place where they could afford me as a full-time minister so I could support my family just by ministry. I liked my job a lot. The environment in there at that agency was really a great environment. A lot of young people, very clever, very thoughtful, good people. We even had a pool table. How cool is that? Yeah. It was a very nice place to work. But my commute was getting longer and longer, if you know what I mean. It was the same number of miles, but the distance between what I was doing here and what I was doing there seemed to be growing. And one day, after I came home, I was standing in my backyard. I was compensated well at the ad agency, making good enough money that my wife could stay home with our children. And it was a huge flyer to consider going into full-time ministry at this church. This church has a 211-year history, 212-year history at this point, and much of that history is full of not always being able to afford to keep a minister time and again. And we hadn't had a full-time minister in decades. Been a long time. And I didn't know if I could do it or not. And I stood in the backyard down there. It's a spring day, evening, getting close to sunset, almost sunset. And from that backyard, you could see the buildings of the city, including the Xerox Tower. There was the Xerox Tower, the people I mostly wrote for. And I stood there and I stared at that tower and that city gleaming in the sun, where I was making a really good living, a lot of money. And I said, God, I don't know if we can do this. I don't know if we can make this work out here. I don't know if I can give up the blessing of that job in the city. I don't know what blessings will be here. And at that, I looked down. I'm in my bare feet, and I'm standing in little wild African violets. All these little flowers all around me on the ground I'm standing on. Now, to some people, it's coincidence. I happened to be standing somewhere where there were flowers. But to me, when you ask for an answer, you get an answer. It's all a matter if you're attuned to God's language or not. And at that moment, God was speaking to me in African violet. And God was saying to me, blessings come in many forms. Some of them are big and glorious and shiny, and some of them are small and humble and beautiful. And God said to me through African violets, if you trust, I will see. I will see that you are cared for and your family is too. If you trust in me, I'll take care of you and yours. I called Kay Sharon on the phone and said, I think I'm ready to be a full-time pastor if you think we can find a way to do this. And she said, oh yes, we can find a way to do this. And sure enough, good people here, several of whom have passed on since, found a way to do it. And I became a full-time pastor. And I went into the office, and it was funny because I had been distracted for a long time, for several months. I came into the office the next day, and I was called into a meeting by my boss's boss, and my direct boss said to me, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do, can't run interference. My boss's boss had the account executives in there, and they wanted to talk to me about the drop in my performance. Wow. At the ad agency. So they left the room, and it was just Ralph and me, good old Ralph Newton from Savannah, Georgia. Wonderful guy. It was raining outside, and he said, "What's going on, Corey?" And I was looking out the window, and I said, "Ralph, I'm going to be leaving here. I'm going to be leaving. I'm done." And told Paul, and in true Paul fashion, he gave me a part-time job. But here's what happened. I was going to stay for a while, and I did stay for a while. And then with Paul's part-time job, I continued to write, this time for Mutual of Omaha, on a new project he had. So I stayed at my desk, not full-time, but part-time, and everybody knew what I did when I wasn't at that desk. Everybody now knew that I was a pastor. I was T-bowing all of a sudden. And little things happened. An account executive who was going to be doing a reading at a wedding wanted to know how to pronounce it. Is it Colossians? Is it Colossians? How do I pronounce that? And I told him. And a production manager with whom I'd never had a conversation about faith before brought me a cross on a necklace that she was giving to her favorite niece. And she wanted me to pray a blessing over it. And we had a wonderful conversation afterwards about faith. And others did the same. And my relationships changed in good and positive ways. Now, there were one or two people who were really leery of me all of a sudden. But for the most part, being publicly Christian opened doors for me to be with people in fellowship in ways I never could have done without it. It was a marvelous, marvelous lesson for me. So when I see Tim Tebow in, of all places, a football stadium, where the Lord's name is often used, but not typically the way we want it heard, I think about those days. And I think, more power to you, mister. You know, you're going to trip and you're going to fall. And they're going to hold up something that they can say, ah, aha, aha. But you are where you are because of the gifts God gave you. Open those gifts where you are and let them know where they came from. It makes perfect sense to Tebow in our lives, to give credit to God where credit is due, to answer the with true humility. Now, one of the great criticisms you hear is, and comedians do this all the time, and everyone who comments in those comment sections, they do it all the time too. One of the comments you hear is this: I don't think God cares who wins in a football game. I don't think God cares who scores a touchdown. And I would have to say I agree with you in almost all cases. I know Larry believes God is a Steelers fan, but... No, he doesn't. No. But that's not what Tim Tebow says in prayer. In his prayer before the game, he prays that all will be well with his teammates and the other team. He prays that he will do his best. And he prays that he will serve as God. Each of us could do the same thing where we are. Pray for all those we will deal with that day, both friend and foe. Pray that God would help us to do our best that day. And pray that when others look at us, they might catch just a little glimpse of Jesus Christ. Tebow or not Tebow? That is the question. Amen.